And now, live from Jerusalem, you're listening to Israel Inspired Radio. Here are your hosts, Rabbis Ari Abramowitz and Jeremy Gimpel.
Shalom. You are listening to Israel Inspired on the Land of Israel Network, thelandofisrael.com. Ari Abramowitz here with Jeremy Gimpel. Jeremy, we are finally back. And when I say finally back, every show that we've done is like a finally back because we've been doing shows every 3 months. But, you know, it's been a little overwhelming here at the farm. We've been planning on doing a show for a while, but then I was in B-Dude, right? What is B-Dude? I was in quarantine.
Isolation.
I was in isolation. You were in isolation. I was in isolation. I got corona. Dvash got corona. Shana got... It was like 6 weeks we couldn't even see each other. So now we're back. And we are ready to record, and we're ready to broadcast our podcast again. Back to our roots, right? We were just talking about this is where we started.
This is where we started.
We started on the podcast platform. So first of all, tell me, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I mean, I jump into very cold water every single morning now. And that has really changed my life in so many ways. I don't even know where to begin to start talking about it. It's been so many ways. I've encountered every form of Yetzer Hara in my entire life, just in this one specific issue. Every type of reason not to go today, you shouldn't go today, you don't, you're feeling good, why are you doing that? Just like the amount of mental gymnastics that my evil inclination has imposed on me to not want me to go into my mikveh every morning has been really amazing. But I found the solution.
The solution is jumping in the water, which is quite impressive because I'll tell you,
no,
I was rooting against you. Not rooting against you per se, but I didn't think it was really going to last, particularly through the snow days, because I remember you became a vegan and you were an evangelist for veganism and you were a vegan for, you were in the New York Times for being a vegan. And then like 3 weeks later, you're eating a steak.
It was more than a year later. Thank you very much. But that's because it just, you know, it didn't feel right. This, on the other hand, feels absolutely right. And there's something about, you know, there's every once in a while, we know something that we should do, but then we don't always want to do it for whatever reason. And I've really come to the conclusion that once you know that something is the right thing to do, you just have to go do it. You just have to do it. Just do it. Nike was a little bit of a prophetic slogan there, where if you know that that's what you should, just do it. And that has saved me so many times just in the last half a year of things that I knew that I should do, but I didn't really want to do it because I'm lazy, because I'm tired, because, you know, I'll do it later. And there's just a lot of strength in just doing it.
Well, you've also worked a lot on a routine, on a schedule, and that's all good stuff, particularly during these days where corona is still really a deal. People are really in their homes, and you need to have a self-imposed routine. It's just a critical issue. So that was the Judean way to start the day. But at the same time, I find that it's been challenging to be deeply connected to the nation as a whole. Because I'm not happy when I'm so absorbed in my own world that I don't feel the pain when pain happens to the Jewish people. Just the other day, you know, I saw this, the beaches were filled with toxic tar. A massive historic-sized whale washed up ashore. Turtles, death, destruction, poison gases. That's such a devastating blow to Israel in the middle of all of this other toxicity and the viruses. And I've just been really praying. I've been davening to be deeper connected, because while I do feel that pain, you know, we're so enwrapped in our own issues and our own things. For example, the vaccine. I want to talk about the vaccine because the vaccine is on a lot of people's minds. It's on a lot of people's, you know, are conflicted about it. There's a lot of unbelievable debates and interfamily hatred that I've seen where families are not talking to each other about this vaccine. Should you take it? Shouldn't you take it? And so, you know, the other day, yesterday at about 6 p.m., I looked like the guy from Hellraiser. Did you ever see Hellraiser? I never saw it either.
I don't know.
But when I was a kid, I remember the poster of the movie Hellraiser, and that gave me such trauma just looking at the poster. I'm like, if I can look at the poster, I cannot watch that movie. But it stayed with me. It's this dude that has pins sticking out of his face. It's like a supernatural demon, Freddy Krueger-like guy with pins all over his body and his face.
You looked like that?
I looked like that because I went to acupuncture yesterday.
Oh.
And the pins were put in my nose and my forehead, all over my body. Unpleasant experience. Why? Because I'm suffering from significant post-COVID, I can't even think of the word. Why? Because I have COVID fuzzy brain. That's one of the things.
Dude, you've always had fuzzy brain.
That's true. That's true. So you exacerbate that. You multiply that. So I have headaches and fatigue. And even more than that is this dizziness. I'm dizzy constantly. I was driving there and it's like a one lane thing. I'm seeing three lanes.
No way.
So I'm just picking the middle lane.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
Not that bad. But there were times I was like, this is not perfectly safe. I'm like so dizzy. And so I'll tell you, I was skeptical of the vaccine. I know it's dangerous to even bring this up because half of our listeners may hate it. Half of our listeners may love it. Nobody's like really ambivalent to it. And what I want to share is actually a call to humility about the whole thing. Because I was skeptical about it, I think justifiably so. But before I even had a chance to decide whether I would take it or not, I was already in quarantine from Shayna when the invitation came that I could get the vaccine if I wanted to. And they don't let you get the vaccine when you're in quarantine because you may have it. They want you to wait till you're out of quarantine. So by the time that quarantine ended, I actually had corona. So I couldn't really make that decision for myself, but I was leaning away from it just because of all the reports and all the skepticism, and it's messing with your RNA and it's this man-made thing. And I don't know, but then I got it and it was quite unpleasant. And the dizziness and the heart palpitations and the fatigue. So then I started being like, you know what? It's like either you're going to gamble for the virus or for the vaccine.
A Chinese-made virus that was made to hurt or an American-made vaccine that was made to help? Is that what you were going to say?
That is possibly something that could be said. There's so much. I want to focus on what the point is.
Because no one knows if it's a Chinese-made virus
Nobody
or not.
Nobody knows if it was made in the lab or not. I don't want to lose the point on where things were manufactured.
Well, most of the debates are really about intentions. Is this a tyrannical intention of trying to hurt mass people in the population to control the world in order to stop people having children? Like, a lot of the fears are about the intentions behind the vaccine.
Okay.
Or I mean, behind the
to
virus.
To me, it's not super relevant as far as the actual physiological effects of the virus, of whether it was intentionally released from a lab, accidentally released from a lab, or it was just from a wet market that someone ate a bat. I don't know which one it was, and that's not exactly relevant right now. For me, the issue is it's either the virus or the vaccine.
Well,
and
was,
I look around.
It is relevant because if it was a weaponized virus that was made in a bio lab in order to hurt people in some case where and maybe it just got out or maybe it was let out, then that's something very different than just something that's sort of like mutated in a wet market, I think.
Who knows? Maybe the mutation would be worse than the engineered virus.
That's also true.
So I don't know. But the point is that I had such a negative follow-up. Meanwhile, I'm looking at my friends and my family. This is like, you know, it's very
anecdotal.
Yes, that's the word I was looking for. But at the same time, I look at you, I look at friends, I look at family that have been vaccinated, and they have a little bit of a headache, a little bit of something for 24 hours after the second shot, and then they're good. And the statistics coming out are really good for this vaccine. So I'm leaning a little bit more towards the vaccine now. But here's the thing. I'm seeing people online posting on Facebook. Someone put a golden calf, had all the Jews bowing to the golden calf, and it said vaccine. And these people are saying, if you get the vaccine, you don't have emunah. You don't have faith in God because you're getting this vaccine and you're putting your faith in the vaccine. We're all putting our faith in the vaccine, and now we're not putting our faith in God. Okay, so that's one perspective. The other perspective, I just heard the other night from a friend of mine. He said, these people that are not getting the vaccine, do they have no emunah? Do they have no faith? And I was like, tell me what you mean. He said, Israel, out of all the countries in the world, Israel is the nation that has gotten by far the most percentage, the most vaccines, the most percentage per capita vaccine. Do you think that Hashem would bless us in this way, would have this overwhelming vaccine wave just for the Jewish people and have it be something destructive and toxic and poisonous to kill us? If Hashem had us get it first, we can imagine that, well, it's a good thing. Okay, so now these people are saying you don't have faith if you get it and you don't have faith if you don't get it. And I think that there just needs to be a certain amount of humility about it because we just don't know. We don't know the long-term effect of the vaccine. So people who believe in getting it should get it. People who don't believe in getting it shouldn't get it. But to argue and advocate, because the loudest story about this vaccine was this poor woman, Ben Chitreed, 32-year-old mother of six. She was pregnant. She, her brother-in-law had this one of the biggest Facebook groups against the vaccine. And then she got the virus, and she died, and the baby died. And then he took down the Facebook group and said, you know what, when it hits you personally, you know, I don't know. And so he was like humbled by it. At least he took it down and he didn't double down, because I imagine it's quite painful to take the group down and implicitly admit that you had possibly something to do with your sister-in-law and the baby dying. And now these kids are orphans. But so he took it down. And that's the point. Like, we don't know. I think that the advocacy and the fierceness on both sides, there needs to be a little bit more live and let live about the whole thing. Do you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. I just want to talk about the emunah side of this, because to me, the fact that Corona started on Purim and now it's come full circle 1 year later and we're back on Purim, and now Israel is officially starting to get out of this sort of economic turmoil because of the vaccine, meaning they're starting to now give out these green passports, and they're going to open up the theaters, and they're going to open up gyms, and they're going to open up public transportation. And they're like reopening the world now right at Purim also. You can't help but look at Purim and look at the vaccine and look at Corona and not see that they're absolutely intertwined. And what is the custom of Purim that everyone knows? The custom that everyone knows is everyone dresses up in costumes and masks. And the underlying message there is saying, like, don't look at the world at just the veil. Don't look at the mask. Don't look at the shallow side of the outside. There is something that's going on underneath the mask of nature. There's something that's going on underneath the mask of the vaccine or of the coronavirus. That is so obviously the message that's being shouted out on Purim. And people that get the vaccine, it's not 100%. Maybe you have like 90, 95%. Sort of immunity. And then people that get COVID, I know people that got Corona and they just kind of got it and then they got over it and nothing happened to them. And then there's people that got Corona and then they died. And it's like all probabilities.
Yeah,
it's
my
all...
sister accidentally gave it to us. She was nearly totally asymptomatic. And then she got this rosacea, this thing on her face, some sort of a rash. And I'm having this. And different people have totally radically different responses to the whole thing. But I think that the point for me is that if you said don't look at the mask, I think it's worth looking at the mask to understand, because something is also being conveyed through the mask, but we don't necessarily know. I think here's the thing. Esther's second feast. I heard you share a beautiful teaching about why she did the first feast and then the second feast before she, you know, outed Haman to kill Haman, right? Interesting thing. I'd love for you to share that. But Rav Biederman shared an interesting idea about why she did the first feast and then the second feast that's different than yours. They could both be true. But she wanted the entire Jewish people to see that she threw this feast for Haman. And that he came and there was a wonderful banquet and then he left. And then the Jewish people were like, is Esther selling us out? Is she now cozying up to Haman in hopes of saving herself? We can't put our faith in Esther anymore. There's nowhere left for us to put our faith. We have to put our faith in God. And so she wanted to do that to give the illusion to the Jewish people that she actually sold them out in order to force them to put their faith in God, which is the only thing that's really going to rectify the situation, which is an interesting take on it. That's the thing. If you take the vaccine, then take it with understanding that Hashem sent it and you ask for Hashem's blessing in taking the vaccine that you should emerge okay. And if you don't take the vaccine, then also do that in a faithful way. But I don't think it's to be castigating people, pointing to there's this desire, this thirst for surety, for knowing everything. And the bottom line is we don't. We just don't know everything. So there just has to be, I think, a general dose of humility and of compassion and of love, not only when it comes to the vaccine, but when it comes to everything. I look at the vitriol in America, this whole race thing, the cancellation culture. It's so overwhelming that it seems like there's no love left. So you can't legislate those good feelings of love and compassion. And I don't think that you can actually nurture them if you don't recognize that there's a common source that we're all from, that we're all children of the one God of Israel, that we're all children of God, every single human being. If that's one thing that I really could with surety take from this vaccine, it's that that did in some level unite the whole world. It should have united the whole world even more to recognize that from Iran to Israel, to China to Russia, we're all human beings that got hit with this vaccine and no one is immune from it. We're all the same biological creatures. We're all children of God. It should have been something that brings us all together. And in some countries it is, and in some countries it's not. And I look at America, and I'm sorry to constantly be bringing it back to America, but there is so much confusion and hatred and divisiveness and polarization in American society that I just can't imagine anything good happening there anytime soon. It just seems so overwhelming.
I do agree, but I just want to talk about two aspects that you brought up before, that those that take the vaccine, so they have, according to the stats now, there's been 4 million Israelis that have taken the vaccine, and it seems as though it's 95% effective. But that means that it's 5% ineffective. And then there's people that get corona, and then there's a certain percentage that die. There's a certain percentage that have side effects, long-term side effects, short-term side effects, and there's a certain percentage that are just asymptomatic. So any way you spin it, it's just a matter of probabilities. And then once again, we're like right back to probabilities and chance and poor. I mean, it's right back to the idea of Purim. And so what about this thesis that for someone, they might respond better to the vaccine than they would to corona. Another person may really respond well to corona, but terrible to the vaccine. It actually might be a tailored thing for each person individually, that there isn't necessarily like a blanket statement that could say anti-vax, pro-vax. Maybe it's like an own person's journey that's going to have to bring him to the conclusion of where he goes. But as he does it, no one can be confident that, all right, my immune system is going to fight corona, or, oh, thank God I got the vaccine, because you're still susceptible to something. There is still has to be an underlying faith. And the more that I've been meditating about this, that there's an idea that is called emunah, which is just believing in God. But then there's an idea of bitachon, which means to trust in God. That's usually how it's translated. And what does it mean?
The internalization of faith.
It's like an internalization. It's a certain courage that you're saying, well, if I believe in God, then I'm ready to take this action because I'm trusting in God that he's going to be okay with me. And I was thinking, well, that's pretty amazing. If you think about going out to war, there's a law in the Rambam that says if you are scared of going out to battle, you're not allowed to go out to that mission. And so there were a few times I remember where you and I were going out and I started getting a little bit nervous. You know, as you can imagine now, I had like 4 kids at the time and we're like going out to a mission. We're maybe going to encounter the Hamas. And I'm like thinking about my children, thinking about my wife. And I start getting scared. And I remember the halacha, like, Jeremy, you're not allowed to go out scared. And so I would have to kind of like psych myself out and just get ready to go out to battle, that I'm not like nervous to encounter the Hamas, but I'm proactively looking for the terrorist that wants to seek harm against the Jewish people.
You have to want to be there.
Yeah. Obviously, that makes you a better soldier. You're more focused. You're more aware. You're like proactively going out. And I was thinking, you know what? That actually might be a truth also on an internal level, that if you take the vaccine or don't take the vaccine, perhaps the more bitachon that you have in Hashem, the more bitachon you would have from corona. Meaning, what does bitachon actually mean? It doesn't mean trust. It means security. It's like, I'm just secure in God. But that sort of existential posture, that trusting that God is going to be with you, confident that this way or that way, you're going to be okay, has to help your immune system actually be ready to go out to battle. And I think that there's a certain, like, people that are just like paralyzed with fear. They're paralyzed with fear about the vaccine. Tehillah, for about 2 months, was just paralyzed. Get the vaccine. Don't get the vaccine. Should I get the vaccine? Shouldn't I? Corona. The kids just paralyzed.
And I think it's also added to that is that she's like a genius. So she delved into both sides of it.
Oh, that's why
she was paralyzed. Argument on both sides.
That's the whole thing, is that there's an argument for there and there's an argument for there. And at the end, it's all a poor. In the end, it's all chance. It's all just probabilities. So you just don't know. So then what do we have, though? We do have emunah. And you can take the vaccine with emunah and bitachon. And you can try to go the natural route, emunah v'bitachon. But I think that, like, underneath the mask of the vaccine or not the vaccine needs to be emunah and bitachon.
Emunah and bitachon. That's exactly
the... And the more bitachon that you have, the more bitachon you have.
And not only that, because lack of bitachon, lack of faith, that fear actually isn't just an abstract spiritual reality. It causes the release of cortisol. It causes the release of...
It weakens your immune system,
and it really releases toxins into your immune system.
Well, here's the other thing, meaning, like, the people that are saying that if you take the vaccine, you don't have emunah, and there's a golden calf, the vaccine of the golden calf of the generation. I really despise that reality, because I imagine that those persons have taken Advil, they've taken herbs, if they've taken, I don't know, any type of medicine or any type of medical advice on anything. Have they never taken, because if they've ever taken any type of medical advancements, whether it be natural, maybe chemotherapy, would it be Advil, would it be penicillin, whatever it might be, what, then that's no, you should have just had faith.
I would say that the golden calf.
That's ridiculous.
The golden calf little image that I saw. So on, it said vaccine on the golden calf. Other people would say not vaccine. But I think that your word should say knowing anything for sure. That's the golden calf, is thinking that you know, thinking that you're in control. And so that's a lot about the vaccine. But I actually want to take this opportunity because we got a pretty fun and cool announcement to make. And that is that, you know, we've had a lot of advertisers approach us over the years. And for one reason or another, it wasn't right. It didn't feel right. If we're going to actually advertise someone to our beloved listeners and have trust, it needs to be someone that we trust, that we believe in. And recently I was approached and really excited. I found our advertiser. It's a blessing for our listeners. It's a blessing for Israel. It's a blessing for us. And it's really cool. So what happened is, you know, over Corona, we've had these bouts with quarantine and people are coming out and people couldn't come out long periods. But we had over maybe it was a few months ago, a group came out, and on the group, there was a guy that was just taken, overwhelmingly taken with the farm, which isn't an aberration. Most people that come here are just moved to tears. Just yesterday, Jeremy, I got to tell you, I'm just walking back and some car somehow ended up here. These two people from Tel Aviv, they don't know how they ended up here. They took wrong turn, whatever it is. Within 5 minutes, she was like, "Ani kol kach mitrageshet, ani lo yodat, yodat lama afilo." She's like a secular Tel Avivian. She was moved to tears, so excited, she didn't even know why. She didn't even know why. There's something about that. Anyways, so who came out here? There was a guy named Stewie. He's an Ole from America, which already puts him in a top-tier demographic of people who have left the flesh pots and the seeming security of the exile to come here to Israel. And he started a company, which is actually a really insightful company to start. So what is it? It's called Israel Farm. It's called Israel Farm. For over 10 years, the Israel Farm has an online pharmacy that provides prescription medication to U.S. customers at, that average 70% less than prices you pay at American pharmacies. It's the exact same medication. Now, how does that work? Israel has socialized medicine, right? So the government regulates drug prices to keep them low. So Israel Farm passes those savings on to you. So bottom line, it covers everything. If you need prescription medication for blood pressure, high cholesterol, depression, anxiety, men's health needs, any other condition, you go to israelfarm.com. That's www.israelpharm, israelfarm, one word, .com, /the land of Israel. It's safe and it's simple, and there are thousands of satisfied customers.
Are you telling me that someone in America, because I don't really know this, that you, this was more your encounter with this man, you're in America and you can either buy a medication for $100, or if you buy it on Israel Farm, you get it for $30.
Right.
It's that
so
big of a difference.
Usually there's not,
that's
there's not arbitrage that is available to the public in such a way where you can get such radically different prices. But that's the thing. I encourage our listeners to go and just compare your prices. What are you paying now? What would you pay on Israel Farm? And knowing that it helps Israel, it helps us, and it helps you. So that's why it was exciting for me. Our listeners that have been listening for the many years know that we're not like...
We've never brought on an advertiser on, or
but
a sponsor.
But I listen to Yishai's show, and he has advertisers. It's fun. It's fun. I'm open to other advertisers, but it's got to be someone that we really trust, that we know is good, and it's just a good deal. And so israelfarm.com /the land of Israel. And, you know, it's safe. It's simple. You can compare, again... I urge everybody to compare the prices because as a gift, our listeners will save 15% on your first order. Use code LAND15, that's LAND15, at checkout. Shipping is free for orders over $75. That's israelfarm.com /the land of Israel. Or you can call toll-free 866-501-4746. That's 866-501-4746.
This is so
it's a
professional.
Contactless
it's very professional sounding what you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we've
thank
never
you.
Done that before. That was really, that was an official advertisement.
That was an official advertisement. Pretty
that,
exciting.
That really worked. Can I tell you that it's interesting that we're now back to Israel Farm because it seems like this whole thing is around sickness,
medical,
health,
vaccines,
wellness.
Yes.
That's pretty interesting.
But I just wanted to say one thing about your point that you just made that I thought was super insightful about how the cortisol, that it's tailor-made. I never really thought of it that way. That there are certain people, there are reactions that people are happening to the vaccine.
Sure.
There's no question about it. And perhaps there are people that would react more negatively to the vaccine, people that would react more negatively to COVID. I tend to think there's more people that would react more negatively to COVID. That's my own personal opinion, and I respect people that differ with that totally. But what's interesting, what is Purim about at the core? There's a whole story, but in some ways the story of Purim is a mask. What is Purim really about? It's about Amalek at the core. This is, where's the first mention of Haman, who is a descendant of Amalek in the Torah? Where's that first mention of Haman? In the Garden of Eden, after Adam ate from the tree. Hamin ha'etz, right? Did you eat from this tree? Did you eat from this tree? When Adam ate from the tree, then evil and confusion was interwoven into his DNA. All of a sudden, he went from being a being of exuding light, walking with God, where the evil inclination was external to him, to being infused within him. And so the battle back from that condition, the battle back from the condition is to expunge that Amalek, that Hamang from within us. And what is that? It is the belief that things just happen. That things just happen. The coincidences happen. There are no coincidences. Things don't happen. When you look back at your life and you're like, ugh, and you're quelling and you wish you didn't make a certain decision and you made that decision, you're spending your life regretting it. Amalek. Amalek is in that regret because nothing just happens. Even our own decisions. God is guiding our own decisions in a way that we can't necessarily fully fathom and understand free will because we have it. And at the same time, God is guiding us along the way. And it seems like it's a paradox that is not reconcilable, but it's just true. So we know that where we are is no matter how painful it may be compared to the expectations you may have in your head of the way things should look, no matter how contrary to the perception of the way things should be, the way things are is perfectly tailored for you in a very personal way to give you the opportunity to grow. And growth is ultimately what brings, I think, the most happiness, going in the right trajectory. You know, I recently heard this, I think it was Scott Adams, my cousin gave me his book, and I haven't really sat down and just read through a secular book, probably in years. And I was reading through it, and it was really interesting. He said that it's about trajectory happiness. If someone has $2 billion, Jeff Bezos, billions and billions of dollars, if he loses half of his billions of dollars, that's going to be a very dark day for Jeff Bezos. Whereas if there's a homeless person that's been eating out of a dumpster and then they find a really high-end restaurant with a dumpster behind it and they just threw food away, those people are going to be super happy that they're getting good food from a dumpster behind a restaurant, much more happy than Jeff Bezos, who's miserable that he lost half of his billions. Right? It's about the trajectory you're going in. So if it's about trajectory and it's about growth, then your opportunity to grow as a human being in faith, in kindness, in compassion, in expanding your own attributes, then where you are right now is perfectly tailored for you.
Yeah, that's really nice. I have just two things that I really want to say that are really on my heart. So the Gemara that you brought up said that the first time that you see Haman is in the Garden of Eden, Hamin Ha'etz. And that's a beautiful Gemara, and there's a lot of wisdom to that. But the truth is, like, for me, where do I see Haman in the Torah is in Haman. The manna that fell from heaven is actually called the man.
Never in my life did I think about that.
Really? Well, that's just what was on my heart this year. And so I was thinking,
so what's
like,
the connection?
So the connection is actually a Torah that you taught me maybe 15 years ago, that the Jews that were born in the desert had this miraculous reality of the manna falling from heaven. But those that were born into the miracle of that reality, that's how they got their food. They had, pancakes falling from the sky, covered in dew, and they would go out every morning. And that's how they got their food from their childhood until their adulthood. There was no miracle there. Like the same way that I go outside and I take an apple from a tree, apples are growing on trees. Like, what's that? That's just the way apples grow. So for the people that grew up in the reality that manna was how they got their food, that's just nature, man. That you just walk outside and the same way that apples grow on trees, manna falls from heaven, and that's just how they lived. So they were inside a miraculous reality, but because they grew up in that miracle, all they saw was nature. And that really is the essence of Haman, meaning whether you see the state of Israel, well, we've just been, I was born in the state of of Israel was already in existence and you don't recognize that the state of Israel is a miraculous reality, or if you don't even know the vaccine itself, the technology that has been developed in this incredible reality, is it going to be good? We're sort of like experimenting with it now. But imagine if it's not dangerous. If it's true that this vaccine is actually able to cure this global pandemic, that is unbelievable. That is an absolute miracle of God that gave the scientists the knowledge of this cutting-edge technology right in time for Israel to bring them and then heal our people. So, like, it's just how we see it. Do we see, like, our reality as, like, yeah, well, this is just the way our vaccines come and vaccines go, and Israel's here and Israel's that, and we're just born into this manna reality? Because that is Haman. If we just see reality as nature and we don't recognize that all of it is really a miracle and all of it is being guided, that really is the essence of Purim. And that's why I think the manna really is like exactly the point of Haman. Mm. And the second point that I wanted to say was that in every story, there has to be a call to action. So I like Rav Biederman's idea that, like, she did the first meal and the second meal in order that the Jewish people wouldn't put their faith in Esther, but they would put their faith in God. And that's fine. That's cool. I like that. But okay, but now what? Meaning, is there a call to action in that? So I have no question that the call to action at the end of the story of Esther is a return to the land of Israel. That's what needed to have happened. 70 years had passed since the prophecy of Jeremiah. Cyrus had said, Jews, come back. And the Jews that stayed in Persia were celebrating with the vessels of the temple, celebrating that the destruction kind of continued. And then God is like, are you kidding me? You were supposed to go back to the land of Israel. Haman rose up, and all of this happened where there was this, you know, scattered, despondent people all around the world, and there's no one to protect them. There was no army, and they're like, this is what's going to happen to you. And ultimately, yes, they returned to God, but it also sparked the building of the second temple and a mass aliyah to the land of Israel. Like, that was the call to action there. So I'm thinking, okay, so here we are in the middle of Purim again, and we're living through this virus reality of corona, with a vaccine, without the vaccine. What is the call to action here? Is there a call to action? So obviously it could be that every single person needs to have their own call to action, that it could be speaking to each person individually, but I'm just going to share like what I've sort of meditated on and what's come to me in my life. And it's relatively transformed my life in the last maybe 3 or 4 months. And that is, either way, with a vaccine, you still might get corona. If you don't have the vaccine, you're probably going to get corona. Either way, you need a strong immune system. That is going to be helpful no matter what. In the whole world right now, especially in the Western world, it's just kind of like a McDonald's gross, obese society. And maybe there's a call here to v'nishmartim me'od lenafshotechem. That is a Torah law to guard your life very much so. That if there's something that's going to actually like maybe take your life, you're even allowed to desecrate the Sabbath. You're allowed to almost break every Torah law to preserve life. And here we are with the global sickness. Maybe underneath all of the realities of like the emunah, what is the call to action there? Maybe it's to be healthy. Maybe it's to start exercising. Maybe it's starting to eat a little bit healthier. Maybe it's to do whatever you can do to strengthen your physical body, which is a sanctuary for your soul, in order that if whatever comes upon you, maybe it's not corona, maybe it's some other sickness, but maybe the call now is to like strengthen ourselves spiritually, but then that actually comes down to strengthening ourselves physically. And I think that in the upcoming fellowships, I'm at least going to try to talk about that, because any way you look at it, if you're strengthening yourself physically, you're going to have to make sacrifices there. Either you're going to sacrifice in not eating the foods that you love to eat. Maybe it's going to be a sacrifice in moving your body, and would you rather just chill out? Like, there's an idea there of the korbanot of Vayikra that maybe just might be speaking to our generation now, that the underlying message is that through like a physical sacrifice of an animal, and the animal in this case being our body, doing whatever we can to actually be healthier human beings might be a real call to action now because of this coronavirus.
It is a physical sacrifice, and I'll tell you, it's also important to strengthen each other. Meaning, when you strengthen yourself, it really has an influence. I've been influenced from you. You run, then you go jump in the pool. You do a lot of things that take you out of your comfort zone. And before Corona even started, I decided to get myself under control, that I'm an older guy. I'm not an old guy. I feel super young.
Not a gray hair. It's pretty impressive.
I got a good head of hair. That's true. But I'll tell you that You know, Dvash is 1 year old, and I want to be strong and vibrant for her. I want to be able to be there for her. I want to be healthy long term. And it's also a commandment, you know, to v'nishmartem et nafshotechem, right? V'shamartem, v'nishmartem. Anyway, we're both evangelists about whatever we're doing. Bottom line is. So I'll just share what I'm doing because I feel really excited about it. There's two pillars. I have this Rebbe on this thing. His name is Dan Diker. He was with us.
Voice of Israel.
He was with us at Voice of Israel. And he's lost like 50 pounds on this thing. But it's not just lost. Like, you look at his blood tests. You look at his physical fitness. He's really, really, really doing well. So he inspired me. And I've been studying about it and investigating it. And instead of wasting time doing shtuyot nonsense on YouTube, I've been watching videos and lectures on this thing. So there's two pillars, and we're not going to get lost in the whole thing. But our listeners are our friends. They're our family. We don't need to stick to one topic. And I'm sure they're just sort of interested to hear what we're doing. So here's what I'm doing. Two pillars. One is intermittent fasting. I only eat between 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. That's it. Outside of those hours, I simply do not eat.
That's 6 hours?
That's 6 hours.
So then yes. 18 hours you're not eating.
18 hours I'm not
nothing.
Eating. Nothing.
Not even like
nothing.
A bite of
anything. You could have water, you could have tea, and you could have black coffee without anything in it.
And that's it.
And that's it. Hmm. And so that's between...
Do you get hungry?
I was getting hungry, but the other pillar is the thing that stepped up on that. So the other pillar of this is ketogenic diet. Now, I am not recommending that everybody does a ketogenic diet. I don't know if it's for everybody. I still don't really know long term if it's for me. I've been on it. It's been great. But the bottom line is that you just cut out all glucose, all sugar, so you can eat protein, fat, and vegetables, and not all vegetables. Meaning, I didn't know that onions and carrots, I used to think those were health foods. I used to think an apple was a health food.
Apple a day keeps the doctor away.
Yeah, no. I mean, no, it actually may be a health food if you're not on ketosis. But within ketosis, one apple will take you out of ketosis. It's 25 grams of carbs, and you're only allowed to have 20 in an entire day. So I usually have those 20 is some form of either almonds or maybe a couple carrots. That's like my protein. I mean, that's my carbs. And so because tachlis bottom line, I'm not going to get into the whole thing. What does it do? It switches your body from burning glucose to burning ketones. You're burning your own fat, which is a more stable, high level energy. It's like you go to the gas station. Do you want to get 98 super octane or 95? So 98 is ketones. And I see that I have more energy. I mean, I'm still fatigued, but a lot less fatigued than I think I would be. Insulin released from glucose. It causes inflammation. That's what I'm doing. And I'm thinking of actually filming it and, you know, making like a progress thing and seeing how it goes. The only thing is when you start filming your journey, you're running the risk of just sabotaging yourself, which a lot of people do and a lot of things that matter to them. So, but whatever, it's a risk I'm willing to pay. And I think it's worth documenting.
I would watch that documenting. I would watch that.
I'm sure you would, particularly if I fell flat on my face. And I want to document that part too, meaning if I just said, okay, I'm eating pizza and bagels, I want to film it so people can watch me. Stuff my face with pizza and bagels and just feel disgusting and gross like a failure. But anyways, so that's what I'm doing. And by the way, the farm has been really interesting. You know, I find that this entire farm experience, being on this mountain and building it, it's like a vortex of perception. There are so many things. You can get hyper-focused on your own little life in your house and forget that there's anything outside. You go outside and you see, you know, stallions running through the farm, donkeys. By the way, was it your donkey that ate the neighbor's?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes. It was a different one donkey.
Okay, because one of the neighbors said that a donkey ate half their garden.
Two donkeys.
Okay, well, if it wasn't yours, because part of me wanted it to be your donkey, because you got super mad at me because we got a new little puppy, which, by the way, shows our faith in God. That our protection from evil out here is a 3-month-old Asian Shepherd puppy who is just adorable and cute. But because your kids are constantly engaging it and playing with it, it keeps running over to your house. And then your wife got all mad at me because our puppy was in your house pooping on your floor, which, by the way, I trained him to do. Either way, so we're really going all... So the farm, let's talk about that for a second, okay? Because there have been a few events that have happened out here over the corona experience. Of course, we've done them safely and legally, whatever. But the bottom line is that every one of them is so magical. It really takes people and they become... So I'm getting calls all the time. We're not really very good at promoting this place at all. But constantly people are coming up. But even though we've had many groups come out here, it still feels like a little bit of a secret. You know what I mean? It still feels like we're not discovered yet, because when this place is discovered, I just imagine it's going to become
a global destination.
A global destination, which I'm grateful it hasn't become yet, because I don't think we're ready for that emotionally, mentally, schedule-wise, on a logistical level. It would just be overwhelming. We wouldn't be able to handle it, because right now we're building bathrooms, which may be like sort of not super exciting sounding, but it is pretty exciting. Like the bathroom thing, and there's a little shower in there. Is that cool?
Very cool.
We're putting the roof on the building. With the roof, we're actually moving forward with the retreat center. I would say we're in the final stretch of really finishing and completing this place so it's ready to roll. And the thought of that is just super exciting, because I know it's not just another global destination. There are global destinations. There's the Taj Mahal. This will be up there. But not because of necessarily the physical beauty. There's something that is intangible, that is powerful here on a spiritual level, that just touches the soul. And when this place is up and running, I think it will really be a tremendous sanctification of God's name. And, you know, just the fact that all of this is happening here with what's happening in other places in Israel, but really all over the world, the amount of conflict and fighting and war and death and nuclear and all. And we're here on this farm, and there's just, it's like an oasis of beauty and joy and holiness. It just makes me think of King David's words when he says, "Ta'aroch lefanai shulchan neged sorarai." You know, so there's a table of a feast right before me, around with my enemies surrounding me. And I always have this visualization of this beautiful feast with these holy Jews sitting at the table and eating from this feast. Meanwhile, around them are arrows pointed and guns pointed, and they're just impervious, and they're not vulnerable to these attacks, to the chagrin of their enemies. Anyway, so that's my thoughts about the farm. Anything you want to add about the farm? I'm just trying to, we haven't been on the air for a while. I want to go through the top points. Anything?
Yeah, you know, the farm is a long-term project, and it feels as though we're a part of some movement of God. I don't know what else to call it other than that. And that sounds like, what the hell is a movement of God? Like, that sounds so abstract. But this network and our fellowship have hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands, if we include the network listeners, of people all over the world that are just lovers of God, lovers of the Bible, lovers of the land of Israel. They want to live good lives. They want to like improve themselves. They want to stay connected to like the goodness of this world. And then somehow this, what is a move? It's like throughout the whole world, there are 40 countries that have members in our fellowship now. So it's a global phenomenon. And they're all sort of, this is sort of the headquarters of that move. And then it's building something in this land. Like, things are actually changing on a fundamental geographic level. Like, the landscape is changing by these people connecting to this land, and it's developing and growing, and this desert is becoming an oasis. But it's happening through this move of these believers all around the world, and it's turning into like this amazing manifestation, literally, of prophecy manifest. Like, what an amazing thing to be a part of. Like, how could that be that we're somehow facilitating that? But it's like you can actually see it with your own eyes that, you know, 7 years ago, there was nothing on this mountain. No electrical infrastructure, no water line, not a single tree. And now there's buildings and trees and orchards and vineyards and pool and this amazing structure that's soon going to bring people to like live on the land for a few days, to like come out to the mountains of King David. It's just, it's like a monument that if built here in the land, it's a little bit eternal. Meaning you build something in Eretz Yisrael, you're kind of tapping into Netzach Yisrael, into the eternity of Israel. This is like a part of the unfolding story of the Jewish people in the land of Israel, in the prophecies of the Bible. And we have the opportunity to somehow like make our little mark. And it's an expression of this movement that's like bringing people together from the nations. All, it's just like, I don't know, it's beyond magical. And that woman from Tel Aviv that just started crying, she's crying because of that, meaning she doesn't know what it is, but there's something about King David and the book of Psalms that were written here and people. There's just, it's like a magic that's beyond words.
And talk about magic, the snow that finally fell here after 6 years, I haven't seen snow. You were like, get out there and do the drone. And I was like, I don't know, the drone may be destroyed. Let it be destroyed. Catch this on the drone.
Totally.
And, but you know, the truth is one of the reasons I think that we haven't recorded a podcast for so long, obviously, is the fellowship. Right, the fellowship has been very all-encompassing. When you start something new, it can be really overwhelming. So we've been immersing totally in this fellowship, and it's come at the expense of the podcast, but at least we're not not putting out content, meaning the fellowship is putting out content, but it's been really a wonderful gift for me. Because since the beginning, when we record this podcast, I have like a mental juke in my head that I'm always like, who is listening? Who exactly am I talking to? Because I know people that listen to the podcast that are like sort of secular Zionist Jews. And then there's like Christians who identify as Ephraimites and other ones are Hebrew roots and then other are Orthodox Jews. And it's like, who am I talking to? What's this about? I don't really have a face to affix to who exactly we're talking to on this podcast. So ultimately, we're just talking to each other. But with the fellowship, there's really like a relationship there. I feel like there's a relationship that is growing between us and the people there. They comment, they ask questions, we engage with them. And it's really an awesome thing that has allowed me to really dig deep. You know, I find that I need to dig deep and say, what do I really, really, really want to say? I don't have hours to talk. I have maybe 10 minutes. What do I really want to convey right now to these beloved friends and family in the fellowship? And so the fellowship has been an unbelievable blessing. I don't know what your experience has been like, how you are reflecting on it.
Yeah, it's been truly life-changing, meaning the fellowship sort of emerged out of our farm being shut down. And I said, well, we have like a mission in the world, and that's connect people to Judea, to this land, to the Torah, to like the living Torah. And I said, well, let's just try to do it virtually. Let's see what happens. And all of a sudden, like hundreds of families from all over the world, like somehow were pulled to these mountains of King David, and we're broadcasting this message. And the real magic for me happens also in between the sessions. Like so many of them have my WhatsApp number, and we're communicating and talking and asking questions. And it's like real, real relationships, real friendships. It's just so marvelous.
And it's
marvelous.
Also supported us and sustained us in a really wonderful way throughout these very, very difficult times, doing what we believe in doing and what we're here in the world to do. And I've, since we're coming out of this on the other end, and hopefully I feel like you can see the light at the end of the tunnel from the whole COVID thing, it's helped me understand a little bit more what this farm is about. Because what the Zoom fellowship is to us right now, this place will be to the Zoom fellowship, meaning that we will be able to have that fellowship, but not over Zoom, but people from all over the world coming to a uplifting spiritual Torah retreat to connect to the land, to connect to Hashem, to connect to each other, to connect to the Jewish people. And it's just going to be a place of uplifting, transcendent, spiritual connection in this place. And then we can, you know, some of those sessions will be filmed and we'll be able to broadcast that out to the world. So it's like this place is like a macro amplification of what's happening right now that's being born within this fellowship.
It's just too cool. It's just marvelous. It's beautiful. It's wondrous. Yeah. It's amazing. We're just very fortunate.
Are we running out of time, or do I have?
So.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll share the. I have some other thoughts, but we can share it for the next podcast, because let's really try. Let's say to our listeners out there, we're going to try to do this thing. We're trying to get back into the podcast because it's a different deal than the fellowship. It's longer form. We're able to talk and work off each other and to go on a more all-encompassing different topics. But anyways, you're in?
I'm going to try.
We're doing the podcast.
I'm on it.
Okay. Anyways, so we'll share soon. So because I'll just tell you very briefly, very briefly, I see things happening in America that are really, really, really disturbing and alarming. What?
Okay, we can talk about your disturbing, alarming things in America next podcast.
Next podcast. All right. So that is it.
That's the teaser for next podcast.
That's the teaser.
Tune in and listen to how disturbing and troubled Ari is about America.
But there is light at the end of the tunnel, meaning the greatest challenges we face, if we look at them the right way as opportunities, then they could become almost exciting because they're guiding us in the way that we should go. And so I think I have some insights on that. I don't have any. I'm not a prophet. But
what?
Yeah, I know. I know. Some of our listeners are like,
really,
what?
We've just rocked our world.
Yes. but we'll share it next time. Anyways, Jeremy, this has been awesome. Listeners and friends and family, thank you for joining us today. Israelfarm.com/the land of Israel. Put in code LAND15 at the checkout. That would be awesome. Anyways, thank you, friends. Shalom, shalom.
Shalom. My name is Jeremy Gimpel. A few months ago, we started an online seminar teaching life-changing biblical wisdom revealed from the original Hebrew and straight from the mountains of Judea. With global instability on the rise, more and more people are turning to God, realizing now they don't exactly know where to look for guidance. The Bible says the guidance will come from the land of Israel. What started as an online seminar has grown into a global fellowship with hundreds of members from over 30 countries. We're participating in fulfilling prophecy as we learn the Bible through the eyes of prophecy, with a focus on what it's telling about us in our lives today. What you will discover is that the wisdom transmitted thousands of years ago is speaking directly to us in our time right now. Instead of learning the Bible as a religion, it's the Torah of Israel, the living guidance of God. So please join us for our next online gathering and get access to the full library of teachings that the Land of Israel Fellowship is offering. Join now and get an audio series on the prophecy encoded in the book of Joshua, absolutely for free. Just click on the link below or email fellowship@thelandofisrael.com. I don't know how you found this video or what compelled you to click on that link, but I don't believe in coincidence, and I would encourage you to take the next step on your journey toward the Land of Israel. I hope to see you at the Land of Israel Fellowship. Shalom.